Honestly, after three quarters, I was able to get my head out of my ass and start playing finally and do something to help my team win. That was pretty much it.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_bball. Today we're going to be looking back at Sunday's action. We're going to be previewing Monday's games from DFS and looking at week 14 in total. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
All right, that is a great idea. We will start where we always do.
Monstrous line of the night.
And the monstrous line of the night, it was. Oh, actually, before I start with that, just a quick mention, I'm recording this before the final game of the day is over, so the Cavs-Lakers players won't be included in any of the awards of the night stuff for today. So let's have a look at the monstrous line of the night. As I mentioned, it does go to Bradley Beal. It was closely contested between him and Steph Curry. Beal played 55 minutes in the double overtime loss against the Toronto Raptors and had a 40-point triple-double. 43 points, 6 triples, 10 rebounds, 15 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks, shot 47% from the field on 36 attempts. Weirdly, was only 3 of 7 from the line, but an absolute monster from Beal. And over the last month, he's a top 10 player. There is no reason he can't remain as a top 10 guy for the rest of the season with John Wall out. He is handling the ball a lot. He's doing more James Harden-y type things, averaging over 6 assists per game in that time frame. He's shooting the ball really well. He's hitting threes. He's doing so much stuff that Beal is a massive, massive shot of him being a top 10 guy. Yeah, from here on out, maybe he doesn't get to be top 10 at the end of the season, but from here on out, I think you should be valuing him as at least a first-round guy and most likely a top 10 sort of a player. Another absolutely huge night from Beal in this game as he continues to just really go from strength to strength this season. So strong stuff there from Brad Beal of the Washington Wizards to get himself the monstrous line of the night. Let's go on to the next one.
Waiver wire line of the night.
This is also the deep leaguer of the night. It is the wizard, Omari Spellman of the Atlanta Hawks. Spellman, who had been injured and then out of the rotation, had a spot start here for The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, played 30 minutes and had 13 points, 4 triples, 6 rebounds, 1 assist, and 4 blocks. He had a couple of these weirdly good games earlier in the season. Back-to-back double-doubles in November, an 18, 10, and 4 with 3 blocks and a 14 and 10 game there. He's shown the ability to put up these games, but by his own admission, he was too fat to play in the NBA, and he's lost some weight. He's come back from that injury, and I think he is, and I talk about these luxury stash guys and guys that if you're in strong positions, you might want to grab. Yeah, Derek White was one of those guys. De'Anthony Melton's one of those guys. I get the feeling that Spellman might be one of those players this season. We know that the Dwayne Dedman, the Undertaker, is an expiring contract and the Hawks might look to move him. So if he goes, maybe we see 28 minutes a night from Spellman from the trade deadline onwards, and that would make him close to a 12-team league must-roster player. I think if you've got room to do it in a 16-team league, you grab Spellman now and you see what happens from there. Maybe in a 14-team, you could make that move. Well, that's probably a little bit risky, and this one, of course, came with Dedman out. But he's shown a multi-categorical ability. I don't think Spellman's necessarily going to become a good NBA player, but that's not what really matters when we get into March. It's all about opportunity and who's got the ability to stuff stat sheets, Marquise Chris style, Tony Roten style. And I think Spellman could be one of those guys. He could become a good player. I'm not sure on him. I'm not convinced with him. But I think an opportunity could really be opening up for him as the season goes on. And that makes him an intriguing guy to look at in a lot of those formats. So just a name to keep in the back of your mind that I think whose opportunity, and say you look at guys whose opportunity might rise, like say Mo Bamba in Orlando, I think Spellman's probably going to have a better finish to the season than Bamba. I think the opportunity for him is more likely to arise than it is for Bamba in Orlando. So someone who is available in tons of leagues, 99% of leagues, and could help in quite a few of those. So a name to watch, no doubt about that. Let's go on to the next one.
Young Gun of the Night.
That is Ben Simmons of the Philadelphia 76ers. He is your Young Gun of the Night. Simmons had a double-double. In fact, he had a 20-and-20 game. 37 minutes in the game against the Knicks. 20 points, 22 rebounds, and 9 assists. No other stats. No steals, no blocks, of course, no threes. Shot 77% from the field and missed both of his free throws. So a really, really weird sort of a game from Simo. He is the 35th ranked player this season. Still hasn't hit a three. Still shooting poorly from the line. He's blocking shots. He's getting steals. His numbers are really, really similar to what he was doing last season. Almost identical in terms of the per 36 numbers he was putting up. In fact, a marginal increase in his field goal percentage. Otherwise, and a slight drop in his steals. Otherwise, it's very, very similar to where he was last season. Just consistently around that third round value, second round guy in a punt free throw build, which you pretty much have to be doing with Simmons. But a strong game, and if you can get 22 rebounds out of your point guard, that's always a huge, huge bonus and something that I don't think many people are generally expecting. I tell a man's not hot. The dud of the night goes to Brook Lopez of the Milwaukee Bucks. It wasn't a terrible night from Lopez, but in 26 minutes, he scored 9 points with 2 rebounds and hit just 1 3. Had no defensive numbers either. We know how good Lopez has been. He's been a pretty decent late-round pick in drafts. He's had some ups and downs throughout the season, no doubt about that, but he's a 74th ranked player at the moment, averaging 2.5 threes and 1.9 blocks per game in 28 minutes. He's got his free throw percentage way back up from where it was last season. You're putting up solid enough numbers. I don't think there's really anything we need to panic about this poor performance. He does have these stretches, as I said, of low output. Sometimes the minutes drop. He is quite fluky in that regard, but otherwise, Lopez is pretty strong with what he does and a clear must-roster player. I do occasionally get the question, do I drop Brook Lopez? I don't know how I use him. And if someone drops him, then it's a clear ad in any sort of league, really, 10, 12 team league. And clearly, anything deeper than that. But I doubt many people will be making that mistake. But you never know. Some dumb shit goes on in fantasy leagues, as all of you guys would be pretty much well aware. The plus-minus goats of the day, Eric Bledsoe had the best net rating, plus 73. Some of his numbers of late had been a bit disappointing, but this was back to the Bledsoe of old. You're not going to be able to buy low after this performance, but after his next poor game, I'd look to do it, and you might be able to get him at a top 80 type of bargain value. While the worst net rating went to Jonah Bolden, negative 103.2. I've liked what Bolden's done in these last couple of weeks. This was clearly not his best performance, as the team was getting smacked when he was on the court, but he is a deep league guy who can get steals and blocks, hit some threes, and be a general energy type pest player, which can have value. And if he produces those defensive numbers, then deep league fantasy guys will want to pay some attention to Jonah. The injury report over the weekend, we got some pretty significant injury news. JJ Barea done for the season with a torn Achilles tendon. I don't think it's going to be the end of his career, but I think we can expect him not to come back as the same guy. Now, this opens up a couple of opportunities. I think the biggest opportunity gets opened up for Maxi Kleber. We'll see more Doncic at point guard. You'll get more Jalen Brunson getting minutes as well. So for deeper leagues, 18-teamers, maybe 16-teamers, at a stretch, 14-teamers, Brunson could be that guy. But I think Kleber goes straight into must-add 14-team territory, and he's close to a 12-team league guy. Combine this with the discussion of Dirk Nowitzki and Rick Carlisle discussing Dirk's role and Dirk being limited in Sunday's game as they look to maybe sit him out games and really cut back on his minutes considering how bad he has been. That really bumps Kleber's value as a three-point shooting, scoring, shot-blocking, decent efficiency type big man. He's not a must-add 12-team league by any stretch of the imagination, but he can help some teams. He's a must-add 16-teamer and probably a 14-teamer as well, but just watch him in 12-team leagues. For the Grizzlies, Kyle Anderson has an ankle sprain that's going to keep him sidelined 2 to 4 weeks. So a decently significant sprain, grade 2. I think the Grizzlies released that information as there's opportunities there, clearly. It's going to be distributed, though, I think, among Shelvin Mack, Justin Holiday, Omri Caspian, Garrett Temple, with none of those guys becoming clear 12-team ads. A lot of chatter of people tweeting to me, do we go and add Justin Holiday now in 12-team leagues? Well, he has been putrid in his time in Memphis, and I wasn't the biggest fan of him as a player in Chicago. I thought he was a great fantasy contributor there, but he just isn't that good. And on a team that's better, like the Grizzlies are, we're seeing that in that game where Anderson got injured. Holiday's minutes didn't increase. It was Mack that played 29 minutes in that game. So I wouldn't be necessarily, I think the upside is low on all these guys. Mack, Anderson, Holiday, Caspi, Temple, it's really low upside. The minutes are going to be spread amongst all these guys and no one's going to be must roster type guys. Now in 14 team leagues, I'd add Holiday. I'd probably add Mack in that situation as well. and Temple more for 16-teamers. But they're going to have moments where they have short-term value, two or three games where you go, shit, what's going on here? Top 90 over the last week. That's interesting. And then it drops off to outside the top 200. And that, I think, is going to be the case with all of these guys. No clear winner, no clear ad in 12-team formats, unfortunately, for those of you who are looking for that little boost that you might get. Let's go on now and talk about these games in some more detail, the six games we're going to talk about from Sunday's action. The first one of those games that we look at is the Philadelphia 76ers and the New York Knicks. The Sixers win 108-105. Embiid had 26-8 as he returned from his injury. Six blocks. The efficiency wasn't great. In fact, both percentages were pretty piss poor, but that's a really nice line. Otherwise, well, General Saunders, Jim Butler, 16-8 in 28 minutes, and J.J. Redick scored 22 with not much else. So it was really run-of-the-mill stuff for the Sixers. Babyneck Wilson Chandler played 30 minutes, did nothing, and that is pretty much what he does on a regular basis. While Mike Muscala, the Moose, who put up big numbers with Embiid out over the weekend, he went back and played only 16 minutes, fewer minutes than Bolden, but still produced the two steals and two blocks. But of course, he goes back to just being a deeper league guy, while Timothy John McConnell keeps himself in the 12-team discussion with four assists and a steal, but really just specialist for those two categories, and that's it. For the Knicks, just another stunning Fizdale move in terms of the starting lineup. Lance Thomas. Oh, we've had a chat with Lance, and we told him we're going to prioritize the young guy so he won't play. Not only will he play, but he will start so that a young guy, Luke Kornet, can move to the bench. Now, Thomas only played 19 minutes, and maybe I'm just being a bit pedantic in picking on Fizdale, but seriously, like, what's the point of this bullshit? They started Vonleh at center. Now, I know that Enes Kanter was out. They could have caught up Isaiah Hicks to play some emergency center minutes. Well, you could have staggered the lineup to have Kornet and Vonleh play the center spot, just, you know, in starting them. But it's not a big deal. It's just the confusion of him consistently doing this. Now, Kornet played his best game in a while, 34 minutes. And in the next game, Kanter's also going to be out because it's the London game. 23 points, 3 triples, 5 rebounds, 5 assists and a steal. But can you bother holding on to Kornet for the game on Thursday? That's the only game the Knicks play this week. His value had been disappeared, and that's not a real word, but you know what I mean, by Fizdale. So, yeah, streaming for Thursday, but holding him this whole time, I'm not sure that that's really worth it. And Mitchell Robinson could also be back pretty soon as well. The Fort, Kevin Knox, I shit on this guy quite a bit, so I got to give him praise when he has a good game. That's massive. 31 points, 7 rebounds, 4 triples and 2 steals, and did it efficiently, something which he's really been lacking. No blocks and no assists, which is always going to be the concern with him, those lack of peripheral numbers, but adding 2 steals is nice. I still think he's more of a fringe guy. While Noah Vonleh cannot keep himself out of foul trouble. 3 points in 18 minutes. I think he is a fringe 12-team league guy, and an honest appraisal of your roster would have him as the worst guy on your team, most likely, if you do have him. While Nila Kina returned, pushed Trey Burke out of the rotation, played 28 minutes, had 8 points with 6 assists and 2 steals. Nice, encouraging. The minutes are there for him, but still just a deeper league guy. Mario Hezonja, 9-5, another 2 steals. His steal numbers are through the roof at the moment. And he's getting to the stage where you go, well, do I add him in 12-team leagues? And I think in some scenarios, if it wasn't for this one game week, then you might consider it. Moutier was solid, but the percentages, especially from the field, are always going to be a trouble. 19-4-4 with him. While Damo Dotson started in place of the injured Tim Hardaway, he didn't do much. 8-4-5, and still just a deeper league guy, even if Hardaway misses time, in my opinion. The next game we look at, it is the double overtime game. The Toronto Raptors with a win, 140-138. The fun guy, Kawhi Leonard.
I'm a fun guy.
He had 41-11 with 5 assists, 3 steals and 2 blocks, while Siakam also right in there, 24-19 with 3 steals and 2 blocks. And Danny Green, he didn't miss out, 16-8 with 3 threes, 2 steals and 2 blocks. So defensive numbers all over the place. I think Green is fine in 12-team leagues. He's not a must-add guy. He's not a must-hold guy. He's that guy that if you need some defensive numbers, he can provide that, a real triple one specialist. Fred VanVleet was out for Toronto, so my man DeLon Wright played more minutes and had 17-6 in a triple one. I really like Wright. I think it's a restricted free agency. He's going to be very interesting. I don't know how the Raptors are going to handle it, but he's a dynasty watch guy to me. Lowry had 12-5-11. Walla Barker, his hot start to the season seems so far away now. 10 points in 41 minutes. That really ridiculous field goal percentage he had to begin the year has started to come back to normal. He's looking more like that guy who struggled last season than the guy who was dominating early this season. You don't drop him or anything like that, but it's worth mentioning. For the Wizards, Otto Porter remained on the bench, played 44 minutes, had 27-8 with 5 triples, 2 steals and a block. So any bullshit that Scott Brooks trots out of, oh, he's returning from injury, still got to come off the bench, is clearly bullshit because he can play those minutes. But again, I don't care. If he plays 33 minutes, it doesn't actually matter. His usage spike is the most interesting thing to me, and I think a big finish could be coming from Porter here. Well, Thomas Bryant, again, a favourable matchup, played a lot of minutes and was great. 18 and 11, one steal and two blocks. Now, I don't like the way that Brooks handles it in limiting his minutes against certain matchups. It seems nonsense to me. And you know, he's only got the one game this week, but it's going to be a great matchup against Luke Kornet and the Knicks, or Noah Vonleh and the Knicks. So I think holding Bryant is absolutely worth it. We don't know when, if Morris or Howard or when they're coming back or what their story is at this point. So I think he's worth holding. Jeff Green was okay.
My name is Jeff.
12 points, 2 rebounds. He's a real fringe 12 teamer. While Satoransky was great on the weekend and was terrible here. 4 points, 7 rebounds and 2 steals. The shooting was horrendous, 2 of 13. I am still clearly, in my opinion anyway, holding on to Tomas Satoransky. Next up, the Milwaukee Bucks beat the Atlanta Hawks. A blowout victory there, of course. 133-114. Bledsoe had 24 with 10 assists and 2 steals and 2 threes and shot 69%.
Giggity!
So that's always a positive. His numbers recently had been low. The steal rate has started to come back up. It's maintaining here, but his field goal percentage was way off. So this is encouraging. Yanni, after missing a game, had 33-6-4. Strong from him, while Brogdon was also solid. DJ Wilson appears to be in the rotation over Thon McCare permanently now. 8-4 with 2 blocks and 2 threes. He was dreadful last season, but he has made massive improvements, and he is a deep league option now. While Middleton, just the 17-11 in this blowout win. For the Hawks, Trae Young, a double-double, but not with assists. 26-10 with 4 assists. After that stretch where people were considering dropping him, he has been fantastic. And I think he can be a pretty clear top 80, maybe top 70 guy for this season. While DeAndre Bembry had 18-7 in 32 minutes. He's going to lose quite a bit of value when Taurean Prince gets back up to speed. As for Prince, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince made his return from ankle injury. Just 11 minutes, 7-5. If he's on your wire and he's available in 24% of Yahoo leagues, you go and add him and those minutes will ramp back up. While my man DeAndre Bembry, 18-7 in 32 minutes. I'm not really that worried about Prince and Bazemore's return. I think he gets 30 minutes a night regardless, and another strong performance here. The Baptist John Collins had 13-11 in 34 minutes, and the Baptist has finally been added to his basketball reference page as a nickname, which is great. The efficiency wasn't there, and he missed the defensive numbers, but I think a strong finish to the season is coming. For Johnny Collins, while Alex Len fouled out in just 17 minutes, what looked like a good opportunity for him with Dedmon out, but couldn't stay on the court enough. Next up, we've got the Houston Rockets and the Orlando Magic. The Magic win 116-109. Jimmy Harden was an astonishingly bad 1 of 17 from 3. Still had 38-9-12 with 4 steals, but if you had free throw percent, 3-point percentage as a category, Jesus, that is a disaster. 15 of 16 from the line is pretty strong, while Rivers had a great game. 25 points with 4 triples, but of course 71% shooting is not sustainable. He is not a must-roster guy. He's a 12-team fringe points guy and probably a 14-team cat guy. Capella had 17-10. He also had an x-ray on his thumb after the game. He says he's fine, but it's something for us to watch. While Marquise Chris also played first quarter minutes with Nene out, and stunningly, he's still bad. PJ Tucker 8-8, while Jim Ennis continues to struggle. On to the Magic. A couple of strong games in a row here from Aaron Gordon. He had 22-8-5 with 2 threes and 2 steals, and he's shooting the ball well. It could be creeping close to a sell high for Gordo. If he continues to shoot 50-plus for another game or two, I'd try and get a top 40 guy back because I just don't think that's the guy he can be moving forward. Nick Vucevic, 22-9-6, while Fournier had 19-5. And Johnny Isaac actually flashed something with the 4 assists and 6 rebounds, but I'm looking at him more as a 14-team league guy. John Simmons out of the rotation entirely. He is just not good, and I've been on that boat for quite a while. Isaiah Briscoe is ahead of him, while Jaren Grant, who I thought had a chance to be a starter this season, I got that one wrong, he is also out of the rotation. And Kem Birch continues to show that if he gets an opportunity, he's going to put up numbers. 7-3 in 13 minutes with Mo Bamba sidelined. The next game we look at, the Golden State Warriors and the Dallas Mavericks. Steph was ludicrous. 48 points with 11 threes, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks, and 53% shooting. There's a nonsense stat out today. This is the 7th time that Steph has hit 11 triples. The rest of NBA history combined has done it 8 times. That is just an astonishing number. Durant had 28-7-5 with 2 blocks, while Draymond had to go to the locker room with a knee complaint, still played 32 minutes. Only the 4 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, a steal, and a block. I don't think Draymond's getting back to a top 20 guy this season. Klay Thompson, the efficiency fell away again, 18% on his threes, just 2 of 11 with 16 points. Again, that little hot streak that he went on, I didn't think that was necessarily a sign that he is back to top 30 type numbers. I don't think he'll get back to that level. Iguodala had his Draymond Green impression, 6-7-6 with 3 steals in 30 minutes. Nothing for me to get overly excited about outside of the deeper formats. Doncic was great again, 26-6-5. The free throws continue to be a problem. He was an 80% free throw guy in Europe, so there's hope that it will get better. But it's been a pretty significant downside to his game this year. While the pencil Harrison Barnes had 22 points, 4 rebounds, and nothing else. That's why he's empty, and that's why he is not a good fantasy option outside of points leagues, really. He still probably is a 12-team league guy, but in 10-teamers, I reckon your waiver wire is going to have a better player. With no Dennis Smith and no JJ Barea, Jalen the Burner Brunson played 30 minutes, had 12-4 with 2 triples. It's okay. It's clearly not a 12-team league guy. It's more of a 16-team league sort of a player. Well, Wes Matthews had 8 points with 5 assists, and Maxi Kleber, not his best night, but 6-8 with a steal and a block in 26 minutes. He is on the fringe of 12-team league value, in my opinion. Finney Smith also got some extra run here, 7-7 with 2 steals, but not a guy that really anybody should be relying upon. A solid double-double for DeAndre Jordan as well. The next game we'll look at, or the last game I'm going to look at here, is the Portland Trailblazers and the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets win 116-113. Lillard had 26-4-7, a strong game from him, while Nurkic got some foul trouble, and that limited him to just 25 minutes, but still 12-8-4 with 3 steals and a block. His season has been fantastic. The Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes may be good, sometimes may be shit.
9-12 on 3-7 shooting, and just continuing the stretch of him being thoroughly average, and it's really confusing. He is a fringe 12-team league guy, while with Mo Harkless out, Evan Turner had 13-2-5 in 28 minutes. That's solid enough. Yeah, maybe you look to stream him, especially for Monday when there are just the 6 games on. You could look to add him there. Jake Layman had 13 points in his 18 minutes. Well, McCollum had 18 points, but it took him 19 shots to get there. And his relatively disappointing season continues. On to the Nuggets. Jokic had 40 points with 10 rebounds and 8 assists. Just, we've got to burn this into our heads that when he starts October and November slow, we don't panic and we realize that probably for the next 4 months after that, he'll be a top 5 guy. His numbers of late are absolutely insane. While the Blue Arrow had 24 points, that is Jamal Murray for you uninitiated. Gaz Harris remained out, so Malik Beasley played 37 minutes and had 13 points with 3 triples and 2 steals. I love what he's doing. I just can't see how it can sustain. While Farton Will Barton played his second game back, a back-to-back nonetheless, 14 minutes for 7 points. If you can keep Barton in your injured reserve spot, you do it. You don't activate him. These 14-minute games, these 15-minute games, these 20-minute games, I think it's going to be the norm for the next week to 10 days, maybe even longer, and then we'll see how he goes after that. Torrey Craig, well, that's about to come crashing down on him, just 3 points in 25 minutes, while Monty Morris played 27 and had 10 with 3 assists, and his value is also about to go away. All right. That'll do it, because again, we are recording this one early before the end of the Cavs and the Lakers game, so let's move ourselves on to talk some DFS. All right, guys, let's take a look at the preview for Week 14 coming up in the NBA. Start by looking at the teams with the best and worst schedule for the week. The Charlotte Hornets actually have the best schedule this week. They play 4 games and some pretty juicy opponents here. They start the week with the Spurs, which isn't fantastic. It's not terrible. But then later in the week, they've got the Sacramento Kings, then the Phoenix Suns, and then they round out the week with the Indiana Pacers. So it's not the greatest of schedules that you'd see from a four-game week, but they're one of only a handful of teams that do play 4 games, and out of that group of teams, they do have the best schedule. And then down the back end of things, the New York Knicks have the worst schedule. They only play 1 game, along with the Washington Wizards. That's the London game. But of course, playing the Wizards is a little bit tougher than playing the Knicks. So by virtue of that, the Knicks have the worst schedule this week, and it's really hard to consider any of the Knicks or Wizards guys as must roster weekly league play, especially the Knicks guys, because they've only got 1 game. Like, getting 1 game is just not enough to have any of those guys really in your roster. In your weekly roster for this coming week, or even streaming those guys. Maybe you stream them in for that one day. And that is about it. Let's take a look at some more stuff for this week coming up. As I mentioned, the Knicks and the Wizards play just the 1 game. There are only 8 teams that play 4 games as well. The Hornets, the Spurs, the Pacers, the Suns, Celtics, Pistons, Clippers, and Grizzlies. play four games. There are two teams that have two games, the Mavericks and the Hawks as well, and everyone else has three games. So all in all, this is a very low-volume NBA week, and you'd see the way that the games are spread out that it shows that. Six games Monday, six games Tuesday, eight games Wednesday, six games Thursday. That's a weirdly busy Thursday. Seven games Friday. You've got a busy Saturday with 10 games and then just three games on Sunday. So really low volume. You can stream every day apart from Saturday. So making the most out of those streams is going to be key. If you've got a waiver acquisition limit, three ads, four ads, five ads, you've got the ability to add someone at least 6 days this week, and you're probably not going to have enough waiver ads unless your league has a seven ad limit, which is dumb. You should limit that in most leagues. So utilizing, and if you don't have a waiver limit, then shit, man, it's time to go sick, because this is the week where you can get multiple players in, especially if you're in a situation where you desperately need a significant win. You might be having to sacrifice the worst two players in your team, and you can add two players Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Sunday, and get yourself an additional 12 games of action to get you a 7-2, an 8-1 win, and that might be enough to push you back into playoff contention. So it's all going to come down to how your team looks, where you're looking in the standings, who those players are you're dropping. But this is a great week to go really sick on the streaming. In terms of the four-game teams, the San Antonio Spurs and the Clippers, all four of their games come on quality days. So there's going to be a ton of quality games this week. And in fact, stacks of the three-game teams play all of their games on those quality days. It's really the only day that's not a quality day is the Saturday. So that's worth mentioning. So it's not as important to look at quality days this week just because of the way the schedule plays out. You can stream these guys on pretty much every day. So we're looking more at back-to-backs. And unfortunately, there's no back-to-back that starts the week Monday, Tuesday. There is on Tuesday, Wednesday. You've got the Warriors. You have that Tuesday, Wednesday back-to-back. Probably the worst team because there's just no stream value there. The Milwaukee Bucks also have a Tuesday, Wednesday back-to-back. So someone like perhaps George Hill, Ersan Ilyasova, you could look at maybe deeper leagues. You look at someone like Sterling Brown or DJ Wilson there as well. Wednesday, Thursday, we have no back-to-backs either. Thursday, Friday, no back-to-backs either. And then you got the pseudo back-to-back Friday, Sunday, where we've got the Spurs who have got that combination, the Clippers who have got that combination, and the Minnesota Timberwolves who have got that combination. So when you get to the end of the week, adding a Spurs, a Clippers, or a Wolves player to get two games out of one ad is going to be key, especially if you've used a lot of your ads early in the week. So you're looking at guys like maybe Marco Bellinelli for the San Antonio Spurs, Bryn Forbes up there, Davis Bertans is an option for the Clippers. Do you take a risk on Patrick Beverley, Avery Bradley? Maybe Marcin Gortat can be that stream option. And then for the Timberwolves, is it Josh Okogie? Is it Anthony Tolliver who's weirdly back in the rotation? Probably not. Taj Gibson, Dario Saric, they really come into play at the end of the week there as well. Let's have a look at some other players who are options who could be on your waiver wire, who could be interesting weekly ads for this week, who could actually find themselves locked into a 12-team weekly lineup. Marvin Williams and Nick Batum from the Charlotte Hornets. As I said, they've got one of the best schedules this week. They play four games, one of only eight teams that do that, so there is value in using those guys. Reggie Bullock of the Detroit Pistons, another team with four games. He's playing a lot of minutes at the moment. He doesn't provide much value in multiple categories, but four games of him versus three games of another fringe player, that's a big difference. And four versus three doesn't seem like much, but it's a 33.3% increase in overall production. Yeah, that's big for a week like this. D'Anthony Melton's a must-roster player regardless, but I think that for this week, you're looking at him pretty strongly. Bryn Forbes, I mentioned already. Rashawn Holmes, also of the Phoenix Suns, is a great ad for this week with the four games on. You got Jermichael Green from the Memphis Grizzlies, also with those four games, who, if Jaren Jackson gets into foul trouble, he's looking at some big performances. Then a couple of other Suns guys, Josh Jackson and Kelly Oubre Jr. can be ads for this week, and they can actually probably be locked into 12-team active lineups given the nature of the way this schedule breaks out, and the Suns one of those only eight teams who do play four games for this upcoming week. All right, guys, let's talk some DFS for Monday. There's only six games here for Monday. We're going to be focusing on FanDuel pricing for today's slate. The first game we look at, the Boston Celtics traveling to take on the Brooklyn Nets. The Celtics are 4.5-point favorites, and the total here is 221. The last time these two teams met, about 3 or 4 games ago, the Celtics smacked the Nets. Maybe a little bit different here in Brooklyn, but we'll see how that goes. Injury status, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who's missed the last few games with a groin issue, he is questionable, while Kyrie Irving is also questionable for Boston with a right quad contusion. Of course, if Kyrie misses, then we're looking at Terry Rozier and Marcus Smart getting a boost, also Jaylen Brown. With Rondé, if he is out, Jared Dudley is also sidelined. Alan Crabb is out, so Trevion Graham started last time. Kenneth Faried got a 12-minute cameo. There's more minutes to go around. Rowdy Rodion's Kurucs on the wing there, as well as Damari Carroll. So a few guys who can fill in if Rondé isn't ready to go. If we look at this game, yeah, spread-wise, it's decent, but this is a day where there is some pretty nice tight spread games. This isn't the worst of the day, but it's far from the best. So that gives us, I guess, a degree of pause when looking for DFS value, especially for tournaments. But given that some value could really open up with that Kyrie Irving situation, there is intrigue here. Of course, Kyrie is at 8,900 if he plays. I think he's worth looking at in this game against Brooklyn, while Spencer Dinwiddie has dropped all the way down to 5,700 because his recent form hasn't been all that solid. And that is worth mentioning, averaging only 20 points over his last 5. This is an opportunity for Spence. It is a negative matchup, maybe only for tournaments with Dinwiddie. As for Rozier at 3,900, he becomes an absolute chalk cash play if Irving is silent. Otherwise, he's a strong fade. D'Angelo Russell's at 7,500. He dropped a casual 46 in the last game, has struggled against Boston historically with just an 18-point average the last 3 times matching up against the Celtics, but he's in such good form at the moment that at 7,500 he's a tournament play. But the recent history, the up and down nature of his performance, plus the negative matchup against Boston, it does make it a little bit tough to rely upon him fully. Jaylen Brown at 4,000, only in play, in my opinion, if Kyrie is sidelined, and Marcus Smart the same at 4,700. I think he's a 30-point player if Irving is out, but at this point, he's someone just to leave alone. Smokin' Joe Harris at 4,700. Yeah, I don't see much upside, a little bit of downside, so he's a fade. Well, Gordo Hayward at 5,200, not the guy that I'm super interested in here. If Irving is out, then Hayward becomes a massive option. We saw his usage spike when Kyrie was out with that eye injury last week. And then with Kyrie back, he's struggling to find his spot. So that could be a real interesting option if Irving does happen to sit. Damari Carroll, I thought he'd be playing 28 minutes a night with the injury to Dudley. Only 21 in each of the last 2 games. He is at 4,600. He's more of a GPP guy than anything. Marcus Morris at 51, a real lock cash guy to me. He's just putting those numbers out consistently, and that's not something I thought I'd say about him, so I like him. Jayce Tatum at 6,000. If Kyrie is out, yes. Otherwise, I don't really see the upside there. Kurucs is a tournament guy as well. And then at center, Al Horford. We know we love centers against the Nets, but Horford had been limited in nearly every game, aside from the one against the Magic on the weekend where he had 42 points in 30 minutes. So I don't know if that's a full indication that his minutes limit has gone, but this is a good opportunity. I wouldn't invest everything in Horford, but this is a great spot for maybe 35 points from Big Al. Well, Jared Allen at 6,000. He's been in that high 20s, low 30s mark recently. It's an okay-ish matchup for him. I'm not super invested in Jared Allen here, and it'd probably be, in the end, someone I'd end up fading. Over on DraftKings, I like D'Angelo a lot more there. 6,500. Rowdy Rodion's at 38. Horford looks okay, as does Allen. I like the 5,200 for Jared Allen. Over there also, Kyrie way less favorable at 9,000, and Gordon Hayward, he comes in with that same sort of scenario that we talked about on FanDuel. We're really looking at a value option if Kyrie is sidelined. Next up, the Memphis Grizzlies take on the Houston Rockets. The Rockets on a back-to-back, and they are favored by 6.5 points. The total is 204 here. We're looking for more big performances from Jim Harden. Nene sat out Sunday's game. He'll likely be back here. While Clint Capella had x-rays on his thumb after the game, he says it was no problem. So it's something to monitor, but at this point, he looks like he'll play. Nene and Marquise Chris will get that boost in value, and the Comet Gary Clark, but none of those guys would be must-roster GPP guys. I think we could look maybe at Chris as a weird option, but that's about it. Well, Brandon Knight also missed Sunday's game. If he is out again in this one, it's just more minutes to guys like Daniel House, Austin Rivers, those sort of players, as well as Gaz Clark. For the point guards here, we know that Kyle Anderson is out for Memphis, so Shelvin Mack got a ton more minutes last time. He's at 3,600 now. I don't necessarily like Shelvin Mack, but at that sort of a salary, that's pretty hard to go past given the nature of this slate. While Conley at 8,300 is marginally overpriced, but I don't think it's too egregiously bad. And I think that he is worth looking at here given the nature of the matchup. Javon Carter, probably not. Shooting guard Garrett Temple, 36, in a very similar state to Mack, having to play a larger role with Anderson going down. At 3,600, there is GPP upside. He's had a 43-point game this season, so that's obviously the upper end of what he can do, but 30 points is not an outrageous expectation. And Justin Holiday, the third of that almost minimum salary shitful troika there in Memphis. He has been dreadful since arriving after the trade, averaging 8 FanDuel points, 8 in the last 5 games, only 19 minutes per game. There is an opportunity potentially arising, but he has been really, really bad, and he is becoming the player that I thought he was. I didn't think he was all that good. I thought his numbers were significantly inflated in Chicago, and this is more in line with who I think he is as a player, and he is clearly in standard fantasy leagues, not a must-roster guy, and in DFS, he's a real just GPP guy at this point. Jim Harden, that's a big price for Harden, $13,300. He is averaging 73 points in the last 3 games. He dropped another 75 today in the loss against the Magic at 13,300. It's hard not to use him, but it does also make the construction of the rest of your lineup pretty tough. So he's not a must-roster guy, but he's not someone to ignore. 4,900 for Austin Rivers. He was great on Sunday. He's not always that good, but 4,900 is not a bad price, and he's not a terrible option to use with Eric Gordon still sidelined. Daniel House at 46. I'd rather Rivers over House, to be honest, even though it's an extra $300. Well, Gerald Green, Omri Caspi, Jim Ennis, Gary Clark. I don't really see much in any of those guys. Jermichael Green's at 4,900. He is putting up good numbers. So much of his value, though, can be tied to the foul trouble that Jaren Jackson Jr. tends to get himself into. But I don't hate using Green there. I think there's a smithering of value. That's not a right word. A smattering of value there for Jermichael to get maybe 25 or 26 with more tournament upside. So I'd lean more GPPs with him coming off a 39-point game across the weekend. Triple J at 6,500. Well, he himself actually played okay in that game on the weekend. 28 minutes for 36 points. 6,500 for Triple J. I think he's still just more of a tournament guy. Well, PJ Tucker's not really doing it. At center, Gasol's at 7,800. I like the matchup for Gasol. I like his recent form. I think he's a solid cash play. While Capella is up to $9,000 on FanDuel, and with a guy dealing with a dud thumb, I don't think that $9,000 on Clint Capella is a great way to spend $9,000. On DraftKings, Shelvin Mack again, your Garrett Temple. Jaren Jackson, I really like him at 5,100. That's a strong price for Jackson. Capella at 75 on DraftKings is so much better than how he looks on FanDuel. I like Harden a lot. I like Gasol at 7,300 and Conley at 76 as well. They've all got some value over on DraftKings. Next up, we look at the Charlotte Hornets and the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs are 8.5-point favorites. The total, 223. The Hornets are struggling at the moment. The Spurs are playing some really, really solid basketball. Rudy Gay remains out, as does Cody Zeller for the Spurs and the Hornets, respectively. At point guard, Bryn Forbes is at 4,700. I see no upside and a limited floor there, although it is a very, very good matchup for Forbesy. I'm not super into him. I am super into Derek White, who's at 5,900. That's getting maybe a little bit high, but the positive nature of this matchup pushes him more into consideration, probably more for tournaments. Well, Kemba at 8,600, not really living up to that number. I'd only look at him as a tournament player so far. Shooting guard DeMar DeRozan at 89, really like that for cash, like it for tournaments. I think that's strong. His numbers of late haven't been great, just a 32-point average over the last 3, but he feels pretty good for 40 points here. Well, Jeremy Lamb down at 5,700, I think that's a good price point to take advantage of with Lamb, whose numbers of late have been a little bit muted, but he's averaged 36 the last 3 times against San Antonio. Marco Bellinelli's been getting hot recently, scoring points but doing nothing else, and that's not translating to great fantasy numbers. And Malik Monk's probably an afterthought. At small forward, you've got Nick Batum, who's at 5,500. He's been putting up some okay numbers of late. I'd look at him as an interesting-ish tournament guy. Kid Gilchrist and Bertans and Miles Bridges, I don't really look at them as great plays. While LaMarcus Aldridge at 86, really, really keen on Aldridge here. It is a very, very strong matchup for him, and he should be able to push 40, if not 50 points in this matchup. Marvin Williams at 57, I think, is probably a little bit too highly priced against a Spurs team who handles power forwards decently well. At centre, Pau Gasol. Yep, no, sorry. Poeltl, Biyombo, Hernan Gomez. It's just a whole pile of nothing with all of these guys. I think, look, they could give you 20 points, Poeltl or Biyombo or Hernan Gomez, but they're priced at 4,000 plus, and that just takes away any of that value without getting rid of any of the uncertainty. So that's a terrible combination for DFS. Next up, the Detroit Pistons go to take on the Utah Jazz. Here, the Jazz are favored by 8, and the total is 209.5. Ravishing Rick Rubio is out. Dante Exum is out. Raul Neto is out for Utah. So we're going to get more of the Royce O'Neal experience. Over there on FanDuel, Reggie Jackson's at 5,000. He played 40 minutes last time against the Clippers and still had just 20 points. So that's obviously disappointing. Ish Smith is probable to make his return, but we wouldn't be using him in his first game back. And then at shooting guard, the Donovan Mitchell at 8,800. I really, really like him here. He's averaging 54 over the last three. Big numbers in this scenario where he is playing as the point guard, so I like him a lot. The Shark, Bruce Brown.
Younger.
Baby Shark,
Look, really, really good numbers for him at times. Not always there is Brownie. He's at 4,000. He's averaging 21 over the last three. There's not bad cash value with the way the FanDuel setup is. And the Duck Luke Kennard at 35, probably wouldn't be looking there. Grayson Allen at 3,500. Could he force his way into a 19-20-minute role? I think it's unlikely, but it's possible now that he's back from his ankle injury. Still don't think there's great GPP or DFS value in general. Royce O'Neal, though, 4,900. His price has risen by 1,400, so that is a little bit concerning, but 36 points last game, a strong game before that. In the starting role, lots of minutes. Not a bad option to have a look at here. Well, Jingle and Joe's at 6,300. I think he is a relatively strong cash game. Relatively strong cash game lineup option here in this scenario. Jay Crowder's at 48. That would not be for me. At power forward, Favors is at 6,200. I think that's too expensive as well. While Blakey Griffin at 10-1. I actually like Griffin at that price. I think he's a 45-point, almost floor guy with 60-point upside. Like Griffin quite a bit there. At center, Gobert's at 9,500. Really like Gobert here. That's a big price rise, but he's giving you 45 a night at the moment. Should be able to get close to that. I like this scenario for him. While Drummond at 9,500, same price as Gobert. Give me Gobert over Drummond, but Drummond averages 54 the last three times he's taken on Utah. So that clearly puts him in play here. And he had 54 in his last outing in 42 minutes against the Clippers. He's clearly got 50-point potential here. So he and Gobert are both in play. On DraftKings, I like O'Neal, I like Gobert. Favors is a cash play at 5,300, I think pretty limited upside. Reggie Jackson a little bit more favorable at 48 over there. Reggie Bullock at 45, I like marginally for tournaments, but that's probably about it with Bullock. Next up, the Portland Trail Blazers and the Kings. The Blazers on a back-to-back. The Kings are 2-point favorites, and the total is 227.5. A low spread and a high total is a great stack opportunity, and I think that's what we've got here. Lillard's at 9,400. Love this from Damo. He's averaging 51 the last three times out against Sacramento. Well, De'Aaron Foxy Fox is at 8,600. He feels like he's good for 38 points every night, so I do like him quite a bit here. Bogdan's at 6,300. Numbers have been a little bit up and down for Bogdan lately, but I'm happy to use him. I think Bud Heald's more of a tournament guy, and CJ McCollum at 6,900.
Giggity!
Probably not my number one priority. Bielitsa at 4,500. I'd probably end up fading him with the way that his minutes have dropped down, with Bagley getting more minutes now, so not interested there. Mo Harkless, I'd say he's pretty unlikely to play at 4,400, giving Evan Turner and Jake Layman some value. Maybe Turner at 45 is the guy you look at, but he's not a strong, strong play. At power forward, I like Bagley a lot, 5,700. I think there's some real upside there. While Harry Giles is minimum salary, he's playing those backup center minutes. He is not a trustworthy guy at this point. I'm not talking about his character. I mean, his production. He could be the best bloke in the world for all I know. Al-Farouq Aminu, the Chief.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
The disturbing thing about Aminu is that he has just been thoroughly average recently. He hasn't been good, he hasn't been shit. I don't know what's happening in the world where this is the case with Aminu. It's really troubling. 5,500 for the Chief. I still think you look at him as a GPP guy. And then at center, I like Cauley Stein at 75. He is consistently giving you 40 points at the moment, which is really, really strong. Well, Nurkic is at 8,800. That's pretty high for Nurk, but man, his numbers have been really strong over the last couple of weeks, and I think he is in play there. Over on DraftKings, I look at Bagley, Bogdanovic, Lillard, and Fox as all pretty good options, and the Chief at 5,000 also comes into play, as does Cauley Stein at 7,000. That's a really impressive price tag for Will. The last game of the night is the Pelicans and the Clippers, and this is your stack dream scenario. The Clippers are favored by 2.5, and the spread is huge. 239 points. This is a real stackable game. At point guard, you got Pat Beverley at 3,800. Now, he does have 30-point upside here, so that puts him in GPP territory, but not for cash. Gildas Alexander, pretty tough to rely upon, while Lord Alfred Payton at 6,200, I think he might be a little bit high. Now, he can get you 30 pretty easily, but what's the upside on Payton? Given the high spread here, he's not one to completely fade, though. I love Lou Williams at 6,600. Great value there for Lou, while Drew Holiday at 8,500, strong cash with high tournament upside, one of the better options you can do. Now, Nick Mirotic is strangely listed as a small forward. I love this matchup for Mirotic. He had 25 in 27 minutes in his second game back from an ankle injury. I'd expect him to push to 28 or 29 minutes here, which should push him over 30. He's averaged 40 points the last three times against the Clippers in only 29 minutes. And this season, it's a positive matchup as well. I like Mirotic quite a bit. Etuan Moore at 42, I'm not a massive fan of. But the Rooster, Danilo Gallinari at 7,300, I think that is relatively strong. Now, Tone Davis at 12.7, of course, he is strong. He should be looking to put up a 60-plus pointer, while Toby Harris at 76, also in a strong spot. There's just a ton of guys you can look at here. The table, Montrezl Harrell, is all the way up to 7,800. It's a little bit concerning. He has struggled a bit against Davis in the past, but his numbers of late are monstrous. 37 over the last five, including a 54-point banger against the Pistons. He's probably more tournamenty, but this is the game to stack for tournaments. And then at center, Randall's at 8,100. I think that's too high and is fade-worthy. Well, Gortat is not a guy that I'm really all that invested in, and I doubt Boban Marjanovic sees the court. On DraftKings, Randall at 74, much more in play. Davis, I love, they're at 11.6. Mirotic at 57, also pretty strong. I like Drew, and I like Lou Williams over on DraftKings as well. Let's look at some studs and values. On DraftKings, it's Harden as my stud, pretty hard to go past him, while Marvin Bagley is a good value play. On FanDuel, my stud is Rudy Gobert, and my value play is Royce O'Neal. On Yahoo, my stud is Gobert, and my value there is Marvin Bagley. And on DraftStars, my stud is Tone Davis, and my value is Marvin Bagley. Make sure after you finish listening to this podcast that you go check out your favorite team podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network by telling your smart speaker to play the podcast Locked On, and then insert team name there. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts and go leave a 5-star review. It's a great way of giving me an early birthday present, so go and do that. And also, make sure you're subscribing on YouTube, hitting the subscribe button, hitting that bell for notifications, and follow me on Twitter at @redrock_bball. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Nikola Vucevic.